Get the latest sports in 1 hour. It's Crunch Time, weekdays from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City, online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
We welcome you to Sports Talk on a Friday. I have to take a moment here. I have my bracket. I write now O-R-E-G-O-N. Oregon advances to the conference semifinals. 6 o'clock tomorrow against Arizona. We'll have the pregame at 5:30 on KGN Newstalk 590 with Terry Jones. Pac-12 Network will have the action. I literally wrote that in as they were shaking hands. The Ducks, after spotting Utah a 3-point advantage after one quarter, win it in hand by 20. Lot of numbers, and it's the time of year I'm accumulating a lot of brackets. Where'd you get that bracket? And final
Tannenism
79-59, and the game ended with Taylor Chavez in there, who's going to be a leader of this team as a junior next year. Jazz Shelley, the magnificent freshman. Holly Winterburn got a couple of minutes. Lydia Giomi, who was in there for 10 minutes, and Aaron Boley. And I'll get the final numbers. Sabrina, 2 assists short of a trip dub, had 19 points, 11 rebounds, and obviously 8 assists. Oregon, dead on 50%, 29 of 58, 12 of 23 from downtown. And aside from Mignon Moore, everybody who shot threes shot well. Very symmetric. Sabali, 2 of 4. Sabrina, 3 of 6. EB, with 3 of 6 on the Boley bombs. Chavez, 2 of 3. Shelley, 2 of 3. And rebounding, 35 rebounds. And points in the paint, 26. You could see that. And points off turnovers, 16, as compared with Utah, who points off turnovers, 12. So you could just see Oregon's transition game was on point after that first quarter. So they advanced, the men, with a huge romp-style victory. Last night, that means they're no worse than a 2 seed for the men's tournament, which starts on Wednesday. So their tournament actually won't start until Thursday. So, you know, an automatic spot in the Elite Eight with a victory against Le Cardinal tomorrow. They will be the 1 seed in your pack. 12 champs. Along those lines, we'll have a great preview and an opportunity to talk with the terrific play-by-play man of Stanford, Scott Reese, will join us. So we were teasing this. Our boss walked in probably about an hour, 50 minutes ago, with a package.
50 minutes is about an hour.
All right. Yeah, it's 10 minutes. Like I said, you wouldn't want to hang by your nards over an alligator pit for 10 minutes. So 50 minutes is not an hour. We were given a package, so open it. Go ahead. You do
the
honors.
Oh, I get to do it? Let's do some describing for the people here. It's a standard manila envelope that says, Steve Tannen, please hold till 4 o'clock. Mass velocity distance spheroid contribution. So I believe this goes back to a conversation we had a couple weeks ago. We were talking about fruits that you could throw the farthest, and then yesterday we
shoot more accurately.
Yeah, we very randomly
from the free throw line.
Had a conversation about fruit we would also like to shoot. So I'm going to open up. Oh boy, here I'm going to look inside. It is. Oh, there it is. Do you have any guesses?
It's a coconut.
It is a coconut.
So all right. I think our caller ties into this.
That is a possibility, although
so
I did not confirm.
To the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline we go. We bring in Gary. Gary, what the heck are you up to?
Coconut up, boys. Just
so man, y'all got a coconut
you know,
up.
To the selection that you'll have in doing your calculations and experimentation on the flight of fruit.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out, is this best for throwing or shooting baskets? Because I don't know about the proper rotation. Oh, yeah, not bad. I just took a shot right at Nick, and he caught it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to leave that open to your creative mind, and please describe the results of your test when you have a chance to conclude all of your research.
All right. No, that's really funny. Thanks for the laugh, Gary. I really appreciate it. That's hysterical.
I want to tell you, you've got a pit bull out on the front desk, too, who's making sure that you're in taken care of.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to mess with Casey because, anyway, if you want to take her on, you go ahead. I'll stay here where it's safe.
Well, just moving on briefly, digressing from our important discussion, 6 o'clock, looks like Monday evening. The Zags will be taken on, I suspect, one of the boys from the South, and in the finals the following evening at 6, it looks like it's going to be BYU versus the Zags.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, after what happened a couple of Saturdays ago, that now takes on more intrigue than I think most who follow the college game would have suspected a couple of weeks ago.
Well, it will be interesting to see when they go to a neutral court what the impact will be. And the other thing is, that was probably the worst game that Gonzaga had played all year in terms of the things they wanted to do offensively were denied to them, and they didn't rebound. And it was just the kiss of death. I don't think they'll make that same mistake twice.
Yeah, but Monday is the semifinal. Then the winner of whoever plays Gonzaga versus the winner of BYU will square off in the final.
Exactly.
All right. We're on the same page. Hey, Gar, again, appreciate the laugh. Enjoy your weekend.
Hey, just one quick update as well. It seems like when Barry Switzer was the head of the Cowboys, he was caught carrying his gun on in his carry bag.
Yeah, another rocket scientist with a carry-on bag packing heat. So,
hey, it happened to anybody.
How you forget about that is beyond me. You know, I left my chewing gum in my bag or a bottle of vodka, but my Glock locked and loaded, yeah, this will probably be frowned upon.
I remembered it halfway through the flight.
Thanks a lot, Gar.
Have a good one, boys.
Take it easy. He wasn't going to pull a one more thing. He's not Columbo. All right.
He had 4 one more things.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Steven. Steven, how are things in FLA?
It's fantastic. I want to tell you, 68 degrees, and I want to say what a great win for the Oregon Ducks women's basketball team on their first Pac-12 tournament game last night against California. If the Ducks can do more wins, I will be jumping around all over the United States and say, you Oregon Duck athletes are awesome. Rob Mullins, the athletic director, is an awesome dude who oversees the Duck athlete.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steven. Yeah, it's been a good, I can't even say 24 hours. It's more like a good 19 hours with the performance of the Oregon men last night. And yes, California has their issues. They are on the upswing from, you know, winning 16 games and 5 conference games over 2 years, up to 7 and 13 games this year. And they do play Oregon State, and they will have at least one game in the Pac-12 tournament. But Oregon, even without Duarte, just looked the part last night. So you got that going for you, which is nice. By the way, Rich Gossage, the ultimate curmudgeon, is at it again, whining about the game and how the sport is run. And just as a matter of fact, I don't even think it makes sense to say, get off my lawn anymore. Just say, Gossage, we're gossaging, we're curmudgeons. It was all, everything was better back in my day, and we should never make progress. And if somebody hits a homer, they should crawl around the bases, because if somebody does their job better than me, I won't just take it like a high-level athlete should. I'll kill them with a fastball, because that makes sense.
I thought you were going to say we shouldn't say get off my lawn because it's not economically viable in the year 2020 with droughts becoming so prevalent. And really the better thing to do is to have an economically, environmentally friendly front yard with fake grass or maybe some rocks, right, or something like that.
I think I read that America is really like the worst place for that, because if you go to other countries, it's like not as many people take such pride in their lawn, if I've read that correctly. You know, between the watering and what you put on it and the turf builder, and it's a real USA thing.
It's part of that the fabrication of the American dream, which is the white picket fence around the house, the nice house in the neighborhood, and you've got to have the perfectly green, manicured and cut lawn and fertilized and fed, and no dogs or children are allowed on it because it's got to look just right. And if it doesn't, you're not living the American dream. You're essentially a Canadian if you have a bad front yard.
My buddy Mickey, his dad, Hollerin' Hal, we used to call him.
Oh, he wasn't Big Mickey?
No. Actually, he was. They were both Mickey, but their real name was Harold. Yet they both got called Mickey. Mickey McFadden, owner of McFadden's Pub. So he was so insane about his lawn. I mean, like, picture this. You have your lawn, then there's the sidewalk, and then there's the lawn, and then the curb. I mean, if you parked in front and, like, stepped on that part of the lawn and then walked around up the driveway, if you got into his house, he'd be standing there with folded arms. Stevie, did you walk on my lawn? And if you got there, fine. So what do you think of the lawn? It's like, yeah, it's a lawn. The last house we lived in up from 2000 to 2003, we had a manicured lawn, because the people who built the house and owned it, they went for the automatic sprinkler system. So it would turn on at 6 in the morning. And let me tell you something, I could tell you, but it wouldn't be an accurate number. How many times, I mean, at the time, for the first 2 years, we only had one dog, so it was easy to clean up, and we would have the traditional, during that time here, you could walk my lawn barefoot and play bocce, and with a cocktail in your hand, and we played croquet. It was big time lawn living, to say the least. Now, with all our dogs, my backyard is trashed.
Oh, my grandma had a neighbor who was kind of the same way. His name was Bob, and Bob was very explicit about, like, what was done on his yard. His family wasn't allowed to walk on his yard, and he would peer through his blinds at the front of his house if people were walking by to see if a dog would walk on the yard, to see if kids were playing on his yard, because we'd be, like, playing soccer and stuff in the front yard, and balls fly over. My grandma had this, like, little picket fence put up to divide the yards, because he got all antsy about where the property line was and this kind of thing, and so she, like, built a fence that was like a foot within her property line, so she didn't even have to get his approval to get it done. And then she got so grumpy one day because she painted her side of the fence, but she still wanted it to look nice, that she saw him take off to, like, go to the grocery store or something like that, and she ran outside with a like one of those, I guess like a blanket or something you would put down to, like, cover the floor if you're painting, and she started painting the other side of the fence while he was gone. It was probably one of the most daring things my grandmother has ever done.
Our immediate neighbor in the house I grew up in on Brandywine Road in Wayne, New Jersey, were the Savakools. Now, as opposed, one of the first things I noticed in Oregon when I hit the shores was no basements, fences. That was not a thing back east. I mean, I can't think of anybody who had a fence. You might have shrubbery to separate, and they did. They had the sticky bushes that was basically a divider from our house and the house on the other side of them. And so if the basketball or the wiffle ball or the football or the frisbee went onto their yard, it was always better if Mr. Savakul wasn't home. He was like, we didn't know the phrase existed back in the early 70s. He was a very big get off my lawn guy. And put it this way. When I was 10, 12, 14, he was older than my grandparents.
Wow.
So he passed, and Mrs. Savakul, who was obviously—
Was he in, World War One? Did he fight in the Civil War?
I'll tell you what, if you think about this, so my grandparents were born in the 19-teens, okay, and he was older than them.
So he might not have been in World War One, but he lived through World War
One. He might have been the tweener, where he was maybe too young for World War One, too old for World War Two.
Wow.
I don't think it ever surfaced that he served. Huh. But, and— from that generation, it was very often the man's way. So if they were going to be old curmudgeons, she went along with it. I swear, in about 1976, when he died, all of a sudden, she was out there with cookies. And if the ball ever comes over the fence, just feel free to get it. Like, without bad-mouthing her late husband, she kind of made it emphatic enough to, like, he was a jerk. And I'm kind of sorry that you kids felt like, because what we'd have to do, because if you ran around, he would see you.
Right.
But you were willing enough.
Oh, the grumpy old guy who liked his lawn was always watching you.
Yep.
Without a doubt.
But you could, if it went off over in the middle of the lawn, you could do the running leap. But if you didn't get the leap right, you'd get cut up because there were sticker bushes. But if you were down to just one frisbee or one wiffle ball, we had no choice.
Oh,
it was like the Sandlot all over again.
The desperation play.
Yeah.
You got to take
Can't
if you
tell
fall
you how many
sticker bush.
Thorn scratches I got.
Oh, brutal.
When we were down to one wiffle ball.
I had to do the same because we couldn't play up against the fence that was on my grandma's side of the yard to like play soccer or football or anything, because even though it wasn't his fence on his property, Bob would yell at us for playing against and kicking a soccer ball into a fence and say, hey, don't do that, you're gonna knock the fence over. And we were seven. There was no way we could knock that
right.
fence over. So we had to kick the ball towards the other side of the driveway, which had my grandma has rose bushes over there, and the ball's gonna get stuck in the rose bush, and you're reaching in and you're getting all pricked up and you're getting caught up, and it was just brutal.
I could be
so grumpy.
You know, it's funny, such a different time. We never played soccer at my house. We went when I got to middle school and I was friends with a couple guys from a different part of town. They were into soccer and they had, it was really, really interesting neighborhood. It would be like there'd be a little street with like a pocket of four families from Romania. Another three families were from Russia. Another were from Czechoslovakia. And then you had the Vivianis, who were all from Italy. And they were all, as you might assume, very big into soccer. Although I heard a word from Dominic Viviani's uncle, who moved over from Naples. And for somebody who had just come to this country, his English was pretty good, but it was broken. And sometimes, whether it was conjugating verbs or understanding nouns. So we're sitting out on his deck, and the old man comes out. He used to make his own wine and carry it in a jug. We were too young, but he'd be sitting out there, and he's complaining about a toothache. And so finally,
I wonder why.
So finally, one day, he gives in, and we're out there playing, and he's like, ah, you kids, it hurts so bad. I'm going to have to go to the dentist doctor. It's like he didn't understand. It was kind of the dentist is a doctor, and he just referred to it as a dentist. So, yeah, that's Dominic Viviani's great uncle off the boat going to the dentist doctor and telling us the finer points of Italian soccer.
I'm far more intrigued by this man making his wine and then putting it into a jug.
huge jug. Well, what used to happen
did
is...
Did he draw X's on it, too?
No, the Carlo Rossi, if you ever see it, it used to come in a gallon jug. It was really high-end. And so he would buy that, drink it, and then forever make his own, and...
Yes, I've seen those.
Oh, have you seen it?
I Googled them, and I've now seen the gigantic bottles.
And we always used to say, if we would go to the store once we were old enough to buy wine for he, or I had another friend whose great aunt bought it. If you look, Carlo Rossi has the grapes with a smile. And we used to make that motion as like, you know, somebody, do we need the wine? And they would make like the grapes up by their ear with a smile. Yeah, make sure you pick up a jug of Carlo Rossi.
By the way, when you Google Carlo Rossi from their website, Carlo Rossi, jug of wine, best red and white wine in a jug. I was unaware there were others.
Right. Did you were we really into options here?
I've gone down the wine aisle. I've seen your choices, your selection for box wine is endless. You have so many options. But the jug of wine, there's just the one.
There's
the one jug. There aren't even different jugs of wine. They all look the same.
Carlo Rossi, man. In the day, that jug, let me tell you something. Once you got of age to drink, price mattered. Oh, yeah. That's why we used to drink something called USA beer. I remember literally having like a dollar, four quarters, and 10 dimes, and you could buy like a case for $3.99. In the day, there was no recycling, so it really was $3.99. And for four or five idiots, you know, that could be your drinking money for the night. All right, and when I say idiots, that's a term I am not, I am being not tight-lipped with. It was extremely applicable. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you want to jump on in. I want to remind you, our friends at Big Al State Farm, Cal Young, next to Dairy Mart, want to make sure that you've got enough coverage. Are you doing enough to protect your family? So what Big Al and his peeps will do is they'll take an in-depth look at your insurance coverage, at your insurance needs, because he's wired in on how to protect you and your family from the consequences that might occur when you don't have proper coverage. So if you stop by their offices on Cal Young in Eugene next to Dairy Mart during regular business hours, or call them 686-1522. Ask questions, compare, and save. And check out their website, by the way, BigAlEugene.com. And we appreciate their longtime support. Big Al State Farm, here to help life go right. All right, break time. We'll come back. We'll have an update. Then we'll start peeking ahead at tomorrow's big one at Matthew Knight Arena between the Ducks and Stanford, with the voice of the Cardinal, Scott Reese, will join us next. 95.3 The Score.
I am still living with
today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk. Coors Light is the official sponsor of your Oregon Ducks and the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953 for your chance to get involved. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
How many of them have really enhanced their legacy and their careers by going to New York? Now, they might have enhanced their bank accounts. Larry Brown, Isaiah Thomas, Phil Jackson. You can't tell me it was good for them. And then even players. Amari Stoudemire had better run in Phoenix. Carmelo Anthony really had better years with the Denver Nuggets. Like, the one guy that kind of sticks out because it was such a brief run was probably Jeremy Lin. And then they couldn't wait to get rid of him.
The Knicks. That's Frank Isola of the New York Daily News. I've been having too much of an enjoyable day. I can't think about the Knicks. All right, let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Again, if you're just tuning in, haven't had access to the electronic media, the Oregon women started their tournament run a little slowly, left the first quarter trailing by three, but then took control in the second quarter and win it going away, beat Utah 79-59. Semifinals tomorrow against Arizona in Vegas. The men off of a really good top-to-bottom dominating performance against Cal last night to put themselves in a really good position. Let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Talk some Stanford hoops. Nobody better than the voice of the program, as well as football. A Cardinal grad dating back to when John Lynch was leading the defense and Adam Keefe was the top gun on the hardwood. He'll be calling the action on Stanford Radio as the regular season draws to a close. Welcome in, Scott Reese. Scott, really appreciate the time. How's life treating you these days?
You know, life is good, and you know, now we got Adam Keefe's son on the current roster, so that makes me feel pretty old, but it's all good.
So, I was reading your bio, and it's very California-centric with you attending school at Stanford. You've worked with the Giants, the A's, the Sharks, the Warriors, and then I see WUTR in Utica, New York. So I'm a North Jersey guy. I got to hear the story. A West Coast guy landing about an hour outside of Syracuse.
Yeah, you know, that's what happens when you want to do sports television for a living. You got to go pretty much anywhere you can get a job, and that was where I got a job. So, you know, I followed the path, and I can't say it is a place that I have missed since I left there in early 1997. But, you know, it was small market TV, and there were some good stories to come out of it.
And if timing is everything, would I be accurate in saying as a reporter and an anchor, you got to cover the Jim Boeheim team who made it all the way to the national finals, losing to Kentucky, that actually was played not that far away in the Meadowlands in New Jersey?
You would be exactly accurate in terms of the timing, unfortunately. And we did cover Syracuse occasionally throughout the year, but being number two station by a wide margin in a two-station market that was so cheap they would not pay for us to go attend the Final Four and cover our team 4 hours away by car, I was not at the Final Four.
Okay.
So I should have been there, but I wasn't.
Wow, that might be a record for chintziness, but
a little
better.
You know, gas was pretty expensive back then.
A little better budget with Stanford. Talking hoops with Stanford play-by-play man Scott Reese. A moment this season, 4 weeks ago at Colorado, Oscar Da Silva goes to the ground with Evan Batty, whacks his head. It was really scary, and thankfully he's fine. But that moment, how amazing was it that it just seemed like everybody just snapped into, I guess, Scott, decency mode, and we really saw sportsmanship at its best?
Yeah, and that's something that I'll never forget. The injury, as you mentioned, was really frightening. And it was far end of the floor from where I was sitting, so I saw him go down in a huff, and I saw the players frantically waving for the coaches and the trainers, but I didn't see his head hit the floor, so I didn't see it until replays later. But the scene was unbelievable. Evan Batty was visibly shaken, and I mean, I've certainly never witnessed a player from an opposing team who not only was he in tears right after the event, 30 minutes later, you know, when the game continued and he was back on the floor, he was still crying.
Yep.
That's how much it affected him. So, you know, seeing all the teams, you know, arm in arm with each other at midcourt, it was great. The crowd was great. And it was just it was a terrible event, but it was, as you say, a terrific show of sportsmanship.
One big picture question in the preseason. Stanford really was given no shot. They were 10th in the media poll, but they were picked closer to last than 9th. You know, lost their top scorer to the NBA. Yet here they are on the bubble, according to Lenardi and Palm on the good side. Do you see them, did you see them early in the season as legit to be in this position tournament-wise, or has this been kind of a pleasant surprise?
Well, you know, I'd be lying if I said back in September that I had confidence that this was an NCAA tournament team, because there was nothing on the surface that would have suggested that, you know, from where we were last year, losing KZ Akpala. And they lost Cormac Ryan, who was a really good freshman last year, who transferred to Notre Dame. So, you know, not only did you lose a really good senior in Josh Sharma, who you knew you were going to lose, but you lost two guys who you figured might have come back and helped you out this year. So it was really tough to tell. Now, that said, Stanford has two outstanding freshmen who came in, and there was some fanfare surrounding Tyrell Terry, not as much with Spencer Jones, but you could tell from the jump that this was going to be a different team. And honestly, you know, they played one of these closed scrimmages that you're not supposed to talk about, and I won't reveal the team, but it was a good team. Stanford beat them in the scrimmage, and I thought, That wouldn't have happened last year. So all of a sudden I thought, well, you know, maybe if things break right, they're going to surprise some people. And then, you know, 15-2 start, and, you know, here we are.
I mentioned De Silva, obviously, who came over from Munich. And after the number he did on Oregon in the game down there, I don't think I have to sell his value up here. But be it his shouldering more of a burden, upping his numbers across the board, how impressive has the big guy been this year?
You know, he's been great. The only problem with Oscar has been staying on the floor. You know, we've had foul trouble issues lately. You could argue it cost Stanford the game last night when he fouled out of what was, you know, in essence a tie game with, you know, 3 minutes and change to go. It didn't happen down the stretch. And not having him for that last 11 minutes against Colorado might have cost him that game, and it might have cost us the ASU game the next day, or the next game at Maples, when Oscar couldn't play when he was recovering. So he is critical, possibly the most indispensable player that Stanford has, although Tyrell Terry, you can make an argument for him as well. But the thing with Oscar is he's just so solid. You know, he's really good defensively. Obviously, he puts up numbers offensively. He rebounds, but the thing is, when you take him off the floor, Stanford really has no low post presence whatsoever. And Oscar's not a big dude. He's not a true center. He's not a seven-footer. But, you know, he is Stanford's low block presence. And so when he's not there, we feel it.
We've heard a couple names you've mentioned. I want to delve a little deeper. The freshman guard, Tyrell Terry, who had another good all-around game in the win against Oregon. Good game last night, 10 rebounds, 13 points. Had a tremendous career at his high school in Minneapolis. How nice of a player has he been year one with the Cardinal?
Indispensable, as I mentioned. You know, he was a guy who we knew he was good coming in, but I don't think we knew how good how soon. And he has drawn comparisons over the course of the season to Brevin Knight, and that's hallowed ground when you talk about the history of Stanford basketball. I would argue that no single player has had a greater effect on the Stanford basketball program probably ever than Brevin Knight, in terms of transforming it from, you know, completely irrelevant on the national stage to, you know, what was a couple years later a, you know, top five team for the better part of a decade. So to have any sort of comparison to Brevin in terms of the potential impact, I think speaks volumes about what Ty means to this program. And, you know, if he's here for 4 years, he's going to rewrite a lot of record books. He's that good.
Couple final thoughts for Stanford play-by-play man Scott Reese. Being a New York City area guy, I got to ask about Bryce Wills from Westchester County, just north of the Big Apple. He was a four-star recruit. He's had back-to-back big games against Colorado and Oregon State. What could you tell us about the game the kid from Iona Prep brings to the table?
And Bryce is a fascinating player. Best athlete on the team, hands down. And that's saying something, because Stanford's a pretty athletic team these days. Can jump out of the gym, even playing on a bad ankle, and he keeps, you know, retweaking it. He sprained it about a month ago, and it's been a battle to stay healthy. But he finds ways to score, and you just shake your head and wonder how in the world did he find that crease, because at this point in his career, he is not a threat from the perimeter. He's not much of a three-point shooter. His entire game is 6 feet and in, and yet he scores, and he finds way amongst guys who are 2-3 inches taller to just take a seam and turn it into 2 points in often spectacular fashion. So he's been a lot of fun to watch. And now three of the last six games, look at his numbers for the season, and you say, all right, he's averaging, what, seven and a half points a game, no big whoop. But three of the last six games, all against pretty good opponents, Arizona, Colorado, and then again last night in Corvallis, he's been closer to 20, and it seems like he's really starting to up his game offensively. Oh, by the way, he's one of the top defensive players in the conference, too. And he's fabulous on that end of the floor.
Oh, no, he's certainly grabbed my attention in recent weeks. And, Scott, lastly, I always like to get a view outside our Oregon bubble. We know how much is on the line for the Ducks. They were dominant last night. So when you talking with the players and coaches, and of course your observations, what kind of Duck team are the Cardinal expecting to see in what's turned out to be a big season finale?
Oh, I mean, this is huge. The team is eminently aware of the talent on this roster, that, you know, Oregon hasn't lost at home, that it's Peyton Pritchard's senior night, that the place is going to be off the charts, electric and rocking. I mean, none of this is a secret, and they're prepared to have to beat the best, you know. And, you know, the fact that Stanford won the matchup at Maples is probably going to make Oregon come out with even more emotion, if that's possible, you know, on Peyton Pritchard's senior night in Eugene. So, you know, I have nothing but respect for the program. I have thought from day one, and nothing has changed my opinion, that this is the best team in the Pac-12. And, you know, I'm looking forward to see what happens here if, in the rematch.
Folks, he's Scott Reese, the voice of Stanford Sports via Utica, New York. Scott, it's great great to get a chance to catch up. Enjoy your time in the Valley. Travel safe, and look forward to catching up again down the road.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Sounds good.
All right. Take it easy. Scott Reese, good stuff. And, you know, you look at a guy's resume, and that's one of the things I always love to do because, you know, being someone who's not from here, seeing where people are from, born in Chicago, raised in L.A., worked his entire career in the Bay Area, doing pregame, postgame, Giants, A's, Sharks, Warriors, you know, very Bay Area-centric. And I'm like, oh, WUTR in Utica, New York. And I thought to myself, all right, there's a year there and there. I guarantee that was a first job.
There, I have watched many a sportscast with Scott Reese on KTVU Channel 2 News in the Bay Area of him going out the Giants games, covering the Sharks in the playoffs and all that. He's very good at what he does.
Well, A, a professional. B, polished. B, C, experienced. D and E, undergrad, Stanford, master's, Stanford. So he's probably pretty smart. Crazy guess there, just hanging out on a limb.
I mean, once you get into Stanford the first time, it's a lot easier the second time. So, you know, why don't you move up in the world, Scott?
Right, like Stanford so much. Okay, whatever. That, you know you're not smart when Stanford is your safety school. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Looking ahead, 3 weeks from when? Tomorrow, 95.3 The Score will give you the world's largest indoor garage sale, March 28th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. It'll be at the Lane County Fairgrounds. Call it spring cleaning. Call it an opportunity to get rid of some stuff and maybe make some hay. Grab your spot now. Booth space starts at $65 for a 10 by 10 spot. You just need to contact the KUJZ front desk to reserve your space now. Admission's just $2. Don't miss it. It's the world's largest indoor garage sale. Saturday, March 28th at the Lane County Fairgrounds from your friends here at KUJZ 95.3 The Score. All right. That brings us to break time. Let's break. When we come back, got many more things I would like to chat about from the world of sports. Some Tiger Woods, the return of Steph Curry, the suddenly now documented return of Nurkic. Aaron Rodgers is not thrilled with his fellow union members. We got things to chat about. Coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Off the rim, Patterson, a strong rebound. Back up with it, rolls it in, and one. What a take. Addison Patterson getting in on the party. It's 45-18 Ducks, and Oregon is on a 20-zip run.
That's good, right? Welcome back to Sports Talk, 95.3 The Score. Appreciate the time of Scott Reese. We had a conversation earlier during the Duck game. The article appeared in yesterday's Wall Street Journal. Attendance at college at women's college basketball games is surging. And the subheadline is, thanks to a transcendent star and a hotly competitive 2020 season in the women's game, things are starting to change. Her name is Lane Higgins. We talked with her at 3:30. And as a rule, we don't do this very often, but I know a lot of you who are big fans of the Oregon women's program, women's sports, were probably wired into the Duck game. So I'm going to replay that at 5:30. I enjoyed it that much and found it that interesting and fascinating. And she's a great writer, super smart, Ivy Leaguer, UPenn grad, and delved into some research about a percentage of a university, how many tickets went to women's sports, women's basketball, how much it's rising, the impact on the secondary ticket market, and why Sabrina is resonating nationally where maybe other top flight women's athletes did not. So if I didn't think you would find it interesting, I would not do that. I do. We will. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. The Oregon women, by the way, 79-59 final. They punished Utah. And the second half, Utah got within 11 or 12 once, but they led after one. It was 19-16. So, you know, do the math. The rest of the way, Oregon gave up 43 points over the final three quarters. And then, you know, obviously, that's bad math there. That's bad math there. I said they had 19, so they scored 40 points only over the final three quarters, where Oregon scored 63. So while Utah showed some resolve and they are a pretty good three-point shooting team, I'll tell you what, the Oregon bench, they were terrific today. Jazz Shelley came off and just, she was Vinny Johnson. She was the microwave. She provided instant offense. She came off the bench in that second quarter and hit 4-5 from downtown. 4-5. Actually, she hit her first four shots, 2-2 from downtown and a couple of drives for 10 points. Lydia Giomi, while she only had the one bucket, she had a block shot that triggered a transition bucket. And like Coach Graves told Jill Savage at halftime, she was instrumental in kind of turning things around defensively. And who am I missing off the pine who also... Oh, yeah, Taylor Chavez. Hit a couple of long three-pointers, and it was at a point in the late in the second quarter, I think, where she hit a three that was an NBA three, and Pac-12 cameras caught her clear as day with a "let's blank and go," and Nick caught it at live action. The cameras caught it going to break at, you know, oh, that's definitely what she said, which she was all kind of fired up. Sabrina with, I want to say, an almost quiet, just incredible performance with 19 points, 11 rebounds, 8 assists. By the way, 2 blocks, 2 steals. Satu has just been nothing short of fantastic. Although she missed a couple in tight, and but she has just elevated her game to a new level. She had 17 points, 4 rebounds. And Ruthie Hebert, just 8 points on 4-5, but battling inside, 9 rebounds. By the way, between she and Sabrina, they were tried a couple times, especially early on, to thread the needle. They each ended up actually turning the ball over 6 times each. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you'd like to jump on in. Also hit us up on the text line, 3210824. Let's bring in Easton? Eston, sorry. Eston, good afternoon. Thanks for calling. How you doing?
Yeah, I was wondering, with the Players Union and the owners, they're talking about adding 2 extra games, one in the regular season and one during the playoffs. I personally don't think this is a good idea because we have enough games already. I was wondering what you think, and if you like it, then what are the benefits?
All right. Hey, I appreciate the call. Well put, by the way. I as far as the extra game during the regular season, I'm iffy on that. I don't see the need for it. I am completely against the extra playoff game. First of all, I think the NFL has found that kind of perfect storm. Their postseason is as watched as anything. The Super Bowl buildup is amazing. You know, you get two teams. The regular season has value because if you're one of the two best in your conference, you've earned a bye. You don't have to play wild card weekend. Then you end up getting at least the home game at your field. So I think Esten and I are kind of on the same page. As far as the extra game, the players might give in because it'll also mean extra money. Of course, the owners only think about the extra revenue. But my question is, why are you messing with something that is the king of American team sports? I mean, revenue is skyrocketing. Viewership went back up this year after hitting a patch where I just don't think there was all that much intrigue on field in 2017, and then numbers rose again in 2018, 2019. So more than being overly staunch for or against, my question to the union and the owners would be, well, why do you want to mess with something that is and The answer is green, but still, it's like the question to Gordon Gekko in Wall Street was like, you know, his whole greed. You wreck it because it's wreckable. But the question of how many yachts do you need to water ski behind? I mean, franchise values are in the billions. The players' cut is going up, up, up. For the first time this coming season, the salary cap will have jumped over $200 million. During the break, I want to check out the. I wonder what the progression has been. You know, the first year of a salary cap, how much was it? And how much was it 10 years later? And then I would say since the idea of Plan B free agency morphed into full-out free agency with franchise tags, probably 23 or 24 years ago, I would say, it probably had something to do with the labor issues for the 1987 team. So Esten has now piqued my curiosity, and I'm going to want to find out, how much money. I guess if you're a working person, no matter what you make, I guess there's never quite enough. But with the owners, I mean, how many billions of dollars? What'd they say this year? $15.9 billion in revenue generated by the NFL with every platform and gear and TV money and concessions and stadium leases and on and on and on and on. Either way, we'll get to that in the 5 o'clock hour next, 95.3 The Score.
But, man, y'all got a coconut up.